Hey guys, fantastic episode today. I'm going to talk about my reaction to an interview with Joe Rogan and Stephen Dubner. And then also we jump into economics and the foolishness behind some economic thinking and how Taleb's understanding of economist really applies to Stephen Dubner and economic type of thinking and test-taking mentality. Then I jump into a coronavirus update in the second half. If you want to get to that, jump to about the 10, 11 minute mark and start from there. So thank you for listening. You can follow me on my website, tstuch.com, tstuch.com. Like and subscribe on YouTube, Taylor space Stuch, Taylor space Stuch. Follow me on Twitter for many more updates, tstuch1. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the episode. All right, guys. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the interview with Joe Rogan and Stephen Dubner before we get into some coronavirus news and updates. So Joe Rogan had a pretty good interview with Stephen Dubner. So who is Stephen Dubner? He is the voice of Freakonomics Radio. Hey, hold on here one second. Coronavirus update. Updating an older episode of the pod. Exporting for YouTube purposes. Anyway, Stephen Dubner is on Freakonomics Radio. And it's an interesting show if you haven't heard of it, and it's basically about the hidden role of economics in life, right? So he talks about incentives, so how incentives can change the way people behave, how, you know, if there's certain incentives to do a particular activity, how it could result in maybe unintended consequences. He talks about many different things. They talk about race, gender, sex, social issues, and how those are impacted by maybe policy decisions or how hidden economic incentives exist behind the scenes. So sometimes the show is interesting. I stopped listening because he's a little too politically correct, and I respect somebody's decision if they want to go that route, but it's like Radiolab. Radiolab canceled one of their, I can't remember which episode it was, but they had one really good episode that they, I think, deleted because of political correctness. And honestly, ever since that, I'm not interested because I want to see people cover good stories, good topics, informative topics. I'm not interested in people hiding valuable and interesting information because it doesn't conform to the currently accepted politically correct notions that society deems okay. Because these things that we deem okay, they change. They change from time to time, and they can change rapidly. They can change quickly. And anyway, Stephen Dubner's voice is horrible to listen to on his show because it sounds, for me, it sounds very high-pitched. I mean, maybe my voice comes across like that as well on this because of the low-quality microphone I use. But I don't know if it's the quality of microphone he uses, but if you listen to Freakonomics Radio, he sounds like a fucking dork. He's like, "Hi, everybody, it's Stephen Dubner. And welcome to Freakonomics Radio." He sounds like a dude that you want to, and I'm not this big, buff, burly guy, but he sounds like a dude that you want to take out back and beat the crap out of. And so, I mean, I'm obviously joking, but that's kind of the vibe I get from him. And on this interview with Joe Rogan, one of the things that stuck out of it for me was how he doesn't look like how he sounds at all. Now, of course, that's a common theme for like radio hosts and podcasters, I think, is that a lot of times people don't look how you would imagine that they look. And he's a scruffy looking dude. He's a New York Jew, but he doesn't look like one. Like, you know, he looks kind of like somebody described it in the YouTube comments, like a Gen Xer hippie looking. He's like looks kind of like a gruff Gen Xer, like, you know, maybe late 40s. glasses, you know, kind of some facial hair, but not the hipster beard. Some gray in his hair, but a good full head of hair, kind of slick back. Like he's looks like a dude you'd actually be interested in having a beer with. And his conversation with Joe was really good. A lot of people in the comments talked about how he asked Joe a lot of questions, and he did. He got a lot of interesting information out of Joe, and I would say props to him. It really showed his skills as an interviewer himself. So just because Freakonomics Radio has a theme of its own, it's heavily geared towards, you know, economics, and not just economics, but things of a kind of socio-political nature, of a socio-economic political nature. That's the track he stays on. So you don't get a whole lot of just like the Joe Rogan Experience, where he just has a guest on, could be about anything, and just asks him whatever questions he wants. It's not like that. So it's a whole different experience. But with this interview, with Joe Rogan's interview of Stephen Dubner, you'll learn a lot about Joe Rogan. Well, okay, you'll learn a lot about Joe Rogan if you never watched the Joe Rogan Experience. If you watch the Joe Rogan Experience regularly, nothing really will surprise you. But it was a good showing on Stephen Dubner's part. And it's an interesting episode. He asks Joe a lot of questions, kind of tries to get behind Joe on certain things, trying to get information about him. And it's a good way to, it's a good episode, entertaining. Something that was interesting is it was really funny. I wanted to point this out about people economics. I talk a lot of shit about economics. I studied economics. That was my major. Have a Bachelor of Science in it. But a lot of economists are just bullshitters that use math to hide their bullshit. And it was funny because Freakonomics is kind of based on economics. And one thing he talked about was, he's like, well, I'm surprised that more comedians don't cheat. Like they don't pack the audience or, you know, have something that encourages laughter from the audience because laughter would be easy to spread. He says, you know, he made a really good point. Laughter is easy to spread. So why wouldn't a comedian, when they're bombing, have something set up to spread laughter so that way they don't bomb? And I thought that was so funny because it perfectly applies to Taleb's idea about people that study and create economic policy for governments. They're very low-level thinkers. They're very first-order thinkers. Now, I don't think Stephen Dubner is an idiot, but when you start thinking in too many economic terms, when you think about, you know, when you really believe that economics is as valid as some people believe it is, then you have these first order types of thought, right? I want this output. How can I get this output? I want people to laugh. What incentive, what structure can I make? Or what, how can I nudge people to laugh? Oh, okay, I can make a laugh track, or I could, what else could I do? I could stack the audience. But what he failed to realize, and it was funny because Joe Rogan, as a comedian, as a practitioner, it was a textbook situation, be what Taleb criticizes economists for. Economists are not practitioners of anything in real life. I mean, maybe some are, but they advocate for policies that they don't understand their effects on people that are actually on the ground. So Joe Rogan correctly pointed out, and I caught this immediately as well, as somebody who is a practitioner in many things, a practitioner of the Chinese language, a practitioner of dance, of martial arts. So there are many third order effects to cheating in something you want to get good at. What does that mean? You don't get good at it, right? If your goal is to pass an exam, to get good grades on an exam, then cheating is fine because it's in a fucking exam. Now, when it comes to real life things, cheating doesn't work as well, depending on what the end goal is. So, if you're a comedian and you stack the audience with people, maybe just one guy, if one or two people laugh to spread laughter throughout the audience in a non-authentic manner, then what that does is it makes the comedian worse. It means you're not going to be a good comedian. because you'll have a situation where people are being encouraged or nudged to laugh by basically being tricked into laughing. And then when you go to a situation, which will be the majority of situations, say you go to a place where you don't have a packed audience, then you have a situation where your laughter, the guy in the crowd isn't there, it doesn't work, and you realize, oh shit, I suck. So you wouldn't be any good at being a comedian. It was very interesting because Stephen Dubner correctly picked up on that soon after he said it. He said it, he suggested it, and then Joe was like, well, that would be absurd because basically you would never be good at comedy. You would never get better if you just had the if you just had fucking people in the audience laughing at you to spread laughter. And that was a great pickup by Joe Rogan, that he noticed that. And like I said, for anybody who's a practice, who wants to become a practitioner, or somebody who's a skilled worker, a, you know, somebody who's on the ground working, doing something to perfect a craft, would quickly realize that. Right, it would be like somebody who's trying to be an artisan or or a blacksmith who is trying to maybe buy other people's materials to sell as his own. Well, quickly you're going to run into a problem when somebody, if you can't get a hold of something or if you can't cheat your way through that process, you'll quickly be in trouble. Same with martial arts, same with fighting, same with many things. Right, you could fake your way through an exam, you can fake your way through many things that are on a first order level. But once you have to keep repeating something over and over and over again, once you get into a higher dimension of decision making, then you can no longer apply these smart, clever, economist tricks to bullshit things. Okay, let's pause for some sponsors and I'll be right back. Okay, guys, so let's go ahead and talk some more about Corona, because I know that's what everybody wants to know about. So let's talk about some updated facts and figures first. So the number of Corona deaths is, oh, I'm sorry. So we'll go over the international statistics first. 142,422 deaths. So that's 114,422 deaths. Or I mean cases. Oh my goodness. 114,422 cases confirmed. 4,027 deaths. 67,000 recovered. That's great. So just to point out, worldwide, there should be a note that there are still about 50,000 people, a little less than half, who have not recovered from the virus, and hopefully most of those will, and that should be the case, should absolutely be the case. Now, let's take a look here. So let's ignore China, because everyone knows China's big. Let's take a look at Italy. So Italy has 9,000 confirmed cases, but they have 463 deaths. And this has been evolving very quickly, and it's also very concerning to me. They also have 733 in serious critical condition. So I have been saying for a while now that the situation in Italy is very worrisome for me. I don't like the number of people that are dying in Italy. Like how I say that, like my opinion matters on it. But it is, I don't like it because it's what we consider, like, you know, we look at them as a Western democracy. We're like, oh, they'll get a handle on it. Everything will be fine. And so that's the hope. That's the hope that, like, say, France, Spain, the UK, we all would like to see these countries have a really good handle on it. What we're seeing is that countries outside of China, the death toll in relation to confirmed cases is starting to mount significantly. And so we're seeing a situation where, let's run the numbers real quick. So I'm not going to be able to give an accurate estimation here of the CFR, but it's not going to be accurate, but it'll be precise. So I think it'll be close. but it won't be exactly correct here. We'll take 463 deaths divided by 9172. Okay, so typed in the calculator wrong. 463 is what happens when you have a lag on your computer. 9172. Okay, so Italy's death rate doing that rough math is 5%, but that is not correct. I want people to remember, you don't just divide total deaths by total cases. You divide cases, you divide deaths within a certain period of time and cases within a certain period of time. In this case, as Nassim Taleb has pointed out, death rate is going to lag behind infection rate by several weeks. And this is something that people do not understand, that people are spreading information on social media. People are like, hey, look, the death rate is very low in the death rate is very low in Korea, so we're all good. What people fail to realize is that South Korea has done a massive amount of testing in a short period of time. They also did a lot to mitigate the spread. That's important to note. And I've heard they have a younger population. So if you take in population, they're very fast measures. I have been reading that they have a very good medical system, though I don't know myself, haven't done a lot of research. That's just what I've been reading and hearing. So that can all help. Here's another situation, though. Because they've done such a massive level of testing so fast, and it takes several weeks for people to die, it is very, very likely that we will see the death rate of South Korea increase. But like I said, it will take a while for people to realize these statistics, like what is actually true about the situation. So currently, the South Korean number stands at, if you were just do rough math, 0.7. But like I said, that's not going to be accurate. And that is up by that is up by 10%, or not 10%, but that is up from yesterday, which was 0.6, doing the rough division math. So, like I said, it's because they did so much testing so fast, we will likely see their number climb. And so, don't be alarmed by that necessarily, but the number will increase. The Netherlands, so what's interesting is also places like other places in Europe. So, Germany is now seeing some deaths. They've only had a couple, which is really positive. That they only have a couple. France has about 30 deaths, Spain 30 deaths, and they both have, let's see here, let's do some rough math. 1412, about 2%. Okay, so doing the rough math of just dividing totals yields about a little over 2%, which, like I said, this isn't 100% accurate. And it should be the same with other places, like, say, the Netherlands. Netherlands has, they'll probably have a little over 1% if I do the rough math here. Yeah, they have about 1.2%. So the situation is that the death rate looks high for confirmed cases. Keep in mind that's confirmed cases. We also don't know how many people have been dying slowly over time that were never classified with this virus. We also don't know how many people are really infected by the virus. There's a lot of unknowns. This is why people are advocating. Oh, by the way, the US. The US has 27 deaths and 708 confirmed. That number will climb a lot. I got information from somebody that works at a testing company. We got 3.8% death rate if you only do the rough math. Now, like I said, this number is going to change. The death rate will change. It will change as this spreads. And some countries are going to be able to get a handle on it, some countries are not. So we should expect the death rate to be all over the place for a little bit. But it looks like it's hitting some places exceptionally hard. And it also looks like it's spreading throughout South America, which is strange because it is the summertime there now. But I think some of those cases are being imported. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, let's see here. What is currently coming out about this virus? So I am kind of all over the map. I don't want to panic. I mean, okay, it's so funny because let's first talk about the media narrative. The media narrative has been basically they were ignoring this virus all throughout January when China was being shut down because people were obsessed with impeachment. Now that impeachment is over, the media is all over the place. There's very much contradictory information. See, the media keeps saying, don't panic, don't panic, don't panic, hysteria, 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 and at the same time, kind of like, I don't know if they're spreading hysteria. I don't see it. People keep saying the media is spreading hysteria. I don't see it. I don't see them spreading hysteria. I see them telling everybody not to panic and making fun of people that do panic. And so that's what I see a lot of. I'm reading about it on Fox News. Everyone's, you know, there's the headlines that seem to be capturing people's attention are hysteria. Don't be hysterical. And people need to understand that the media has pushed this whole thing into just like election, just like politics. Most people are not nuanced thinkers, and they are therefore being pushed into a binary system of thought. You're either pro-hysteria or anti-hysteria. And so people aren't able to realize that there is a real potential threat on the ground with this virus, and that you can prepare, you can spread the word without being panicked. I am not a panicked person. I'm obsessed with reading and talking about this to get the word out, but I am not panicked at all. Like, I'm not running around like the sky's falling. I have been preparing for weeks. I've been buying food, been buying water, been telling family members to prepare, but I still go out on the road. I'm still doing stuff, but I'm not going out in public. I go shopping when no one else is at the store. I don't go to the gym. I'm not going to public events. So I am staying away from a lot of public things. I'm going to cancel. I'm supposed to go to a big martial arts tournament at the end of this month. I'm going to cancel that. And so, this is my opinion. This is my situation. And for one, I'm doing this because I am trying to live by what I'm encouraging other people to do, right? That's one, is if I'm telling people, hey, stay out of crowded areas, it's not right for me to go run around dancing and doing stupid shit, right? The other thing is I do believe this is a real threat, and I don't want to spread it to my parents, to my dad, to my grandparents, to my friends, people I know. And so I'm doing my best to isolate myself as much as possible, as much as can be done. And I think other people should do the same. But don't let the media binary way of thinking stop you from preparing yourself. You don't need to be hysterical. If you're spreading information locally about what is happening in your area, you should understand that that doesn't mean you're hysterical. You're just trying to spread the word and help other people get ready. So that's what I have for today. Everyone should take precautions. Avoid public areas. If you think you've been exposed, self-quarantine. Make sure that you have enough supplies, food, water for yourself to be quarantined or for a local lockdown or quarantine in your area. Prepare for kids to be home from school for extended periods of time. Like I said, this isn't panic. This is just basic preparation. Prepare to educate your kids or your family members about why they're not allowed to go outside, about why they're not allowed to go out and do certain things. So let's spread the word. Let's get people prepared. Get people prepared. Don't get people panicked. There is a nuance. You don't have to be hysterical to go out and buy some extra water and food. Okay, guys, that's all I got. You can follow me on my website, tstutch.com. You can like and subscribe on YouTube, Taylor Space Stutch. You can follow me on Twitter. Lots of new info and updates on Twitter, tstutch1. Thank you very much, and have a great day.